Okay, so I guess we can start. So this evening I had planned to give a particular talk, but then events in the world kind of overtook my plan. And I thought it was probably a good opportunity to talk a little bit about how to deal with what for many people I think are kind of difficult events to deal with, and to talk a little bit about that. It's not going to be about politics. I'm not going to kind of say this person is bad, this person is good, or anything like that. Because if we talk in that way, we create divisions among people. And one of the things that I have found as a Buddhist monk is that you find good Buddhists in all walks of life, with all kinds of different views, right? Except for really bad views like, you know, murder is good and that sort of stuff. But, you know, and we find Buddhists of all types in this world. And one of the most important things from my point of view, being a Buddhist monastic, is to be inclusive. Everybody should be brought on board. Should be a big tent, right? We should have open hearts and arms for everybody. We shouldn't exclude people. So this is certainly not going to be a political talk at all, but rather to talk about how to deal with situations when we feel that our future is threatened, things are looking bad. Of course, for those who are supportive of certain political views, not an issue. But for many of those people who find it difficult, this is who this talk is meant for. But even for those who are happy with a particular political situation, the election in the US or whatever it is, even though this may not be a difficult time, other times will be difficult. So it's still useful, right? How do we deal with things when things seem difficult and hard in the world? And the first thing that I found, which was quite interesting and quite strange to me in a sense, is how many people felt distraught about this, right? You have an election in a country far away and the outcome isn't quite as you had hoped for. It's different from what you had hoped for, and you feel really distraught about it. You feel it's really difficult. You feel the future is threatened and all these kind of things. And to me it is strange, because what it really shows us is that we haven't really taken on board the Buddha's message all that profoundly. Because the Buddha's message, one of the most basic things about Buddhism, is this idea that things are impermanent. Anicca is the Pali word. And in fact, the word impermanence is not a very good translation of this word, anicca. Well, it is actually a good translation, but there are other ways of looking at this word. And anicca means things like unreliable, right? Uncertain. Changeable. Nothing is really ever solid. Something you can't rely on. Unreliable. And I like this idea of unreliability. Everything in the world is like that. Everything is unreliable. Everything is always changing. So if we are surprised by, you know, certain political events in the world, it means we haven't really taken it on board. We may feel it's wrong. We may feel it's going the wrong direction. But it's also to be expected. This is what the world is like, right? This is such a foundational message of the Buddha's teachings. Sometimes when we talk about this idea of anicca in Buddhism, idea of impermanence, we think of it as something that we do in meditation practice, right? You sit down, close your eyes, and you feel, oh, everything is impermanent. You feel like, you know, your mind is always moving. You feel the body is always changing, sensations coming and going, all of these kind of things. We think it as some kind of experience that we're having in the here and now. But actually, if you start to read the word of the Buddha himself, the source of all of these things, right? He doesn't talk about it that much in that particular way. There are certain, perhaps, allusions to that. But the reality is, if you look at some of these very important discourses of the Buddha, like the very famous, you know, it is very famous, the Satipatthana Sutta, it doesn't actually say that in quite the way that people might think it says that. In fact, the way the Buddha talks about impermanence is very often really big picture, right? Really, wow, really, really big picture. And this is one of the problems, I think, with us now. Instead of actually looking at the big picture, one of the problems, we're seeing one event in the world, right? And that one event becomes so big. It blots out everything else. And all we can think of is this one event. It's like when you want to see your hand, if you have your hand too close to your face, right? It's all similar. You can't see anything. You have no perspective. You move your hand away. You can see what your hand is like. Okay, five fingers, a few lines, that kind of stuff. But and it's exactly the same thing with this kind of events in the world. It's all too close to us. The big picture, actually, things look very, very different. And that big picture is even more scary in many ways. This is the weird thing here. And this is a great time to be a Buddhist monk, right? People are kind of worried. Okay, now is a chance to grab you, hold of you, right? And kind of draw you into some of these profound and very beautiful teachings of the Buddha. What does the Buddha say about this? Big picture impermanence, big picture unreliability. I gave a talk here last year about how the Buddha talks about how the universe kind of changes, right? It's one of those amazing things. I don't know how the Buddha could have... Actually, I have some ideas how he did this, but that's not for tonight. But one of the things that he says is that there comes a point in time in the future when the entire earth will burn up, right? The sun will become so hot, the energy from the sun will be so great that the entire earth will just disappear. And of course, we know that from modern physics. That's exactly what's going to happen in the future. But for the Buddha, this is a sign of how impermanent, how incredibly unreliable everything is. And of course, a small, a political election in a particular country is pretty small stuff compared to the whole earth burning up, right? If you're worried about climate change, imagine, I think, of course, there are very good reasons for being concerned about that, but if you compare to kind of the earth burning up, it's pretty small scale climate change, right? That's really climate change on a big scale, when the whole earth kind of smolders up and turns to dust. It's a very different thing again. So this is how the Buddha talks about impermanence. It's massively impermanent. Impermanent kind of in a way which is kind of beyond, especially in those days, beyond people's conception. Now we have a bit more conception of those things because of modern science and these kind of things, but still. And it talks about the impermanence of society. There's another way the Buddha talks about these things. He says society goes through cycles. Right? There are times when society is kind of heading in the right direction. People are moral. People tend to be kind to each other. Not everybody is moral. That's just impossible. But there's more of it in society. People's lives tend to become longer, right? One of the consequences of that, according to Buddhism. And society is more harmonious. You get good leaders, right? Leaders who are reliable and kind with good hearts. There are some suttas that talk about the leaders who are stream mentors, leaders who have seen the Dhamma, understood the Buddhist teachings to their core. You can imagine what kind of society you get when the leaders are of that kind of caliber. And then you get times when things start to decline, right? Immorality increases. The leaders get really dodgy, right? And then everything starts to go downhill until you reach one particular period. This is like one of these mythologies, but I think mythology in the word of the Buddha is always very closely related to what actually happens. And you get to this period called the sword interval, and where people see each other as wild beasts, and they grab hold of swords and chop off each other's heads, and call this other, "You vile beast, I'm going to kill you." And then a few of them survive, and they pull back and they say, "Wait a minute, something has gone wrong. What are we doing to each other?" And then they kind of gradually morality increases, and it builds up again, and society becomes better. Right? Impermanence on a very, very massive scale. So we shouldn't really be surprised at what is happening now. But what is also interesting, not only is impermanence so everywhere, wherever we look, it is found, but often it is also very fast, right? It happens like that. Suddenly something has changed. Suddenly a family member has cancer. Suddenly a family member has died. Suddenly, we get a political system, whatever, we don't like or we don't support. And it seems to happen so fast. And suddenly it's gone. And I think one very powerful way of looking at this idea of impermanence is to think of yourself. You're always walking on a carpet which isn't moored to anything, it's just a loose carpet, and then there is somebody holding the carpet on the end, and at any time they are there ready to pull out the carpet from under your feet, right? And whoa, you wobble, you can't stand. And this is a very good simile for impermanence, because it happens so fast, and the idea of not being able to stand means that you are challenged, your attachments are challenged, your worldview is challenged, all these things that we hold so dear are challenged. You lose your balance, you hurt yourself, you suffer as a consequence. That is the root problem. The root problem is that we are holding on to a particular worldview. We are attaching to certain things. And because we are doing that, when change comes, we can't deal with it. We think, oh, I want the world to be peaceful. I want everything to be nice. We have just lived now, in the most of the Western world at least, through a long period of peace. You know, I have never seen any war in my lifetime. My parents haven't seen any war in their lifetime, right? So it's been like peace, peace, peace. And you kind of think that this is the way it's going to be. And then somebody comes and pulls out the carpet. And that somebody is change itself, right? It's just nature. It's reality coming and pulling things out from under your feet. And because you're holding on to things, you have a problem. So this is really what it is about, understanding that danger that we're always walking on a carpet that is ready to be pulled down from under our feet. Like a continuous earthquake, right? There's nowhere really to stand. Nothing really to hold on to. It's radical, but it's actually very useful once you start to get that idea of what the world is like, because it changes your entire outlook, your way of dealing with things. You can actually start to deal with things if you see things in a realistic way. So what the problem is here, the problem is basically that we are holding on to things, right? Oh, the world is supposed to be nice, it's supposed to be like this, and then it doesn't. One of the great suttas, which actually explain this in a very simple way, is where the Buddha says that one of the contemplations that we should do often is to remind ourselves that everything dear and pleasing to us must become otherwise, must change. Everything dear and pleasing to you must change and become otherwise, right? So if you think about the world in a certain way, that is not the thing that is most dear to us, the world or the political system or whatever, or nature or these kind of things. But still, we are holding on to these in a certain way. We have certain ideas what a good world is like. And so we hold on to that to some extent. It is dear and pleasing to us. Then change comes around, rips it out. And then, of course, because you have that idea, it's going to hurt when it actually happens. Of course, it goes much more profoundly than that, right? Your family members get sick and ill. That is one of the really big ones. I had my sister, a couple of years ago, she got cancer. The cancer got worse and worse until the point when it started spreading through the body, right? It metastasizing and this kind of stuff. I had been a Buddhist monk at that stage for about 20 years or so. So I was actually quite pleased. I was able to deal with it in a very different way from what I would have before I became a Buddhist monk, in which case I would have taken it very badly probably. But as a Buddhist monk, because I have reflected on these things, I know this is the nature of reality, so I focus on different things. What I focus on instead of focusing on, oh no, she's going to die, I think, she's had a good life, right? She has never lacked anything in her life. She has enjoyed all the things that people can enjoy in the world. And on top of that, she has been a good person. Hooray! Right, wonderful, great. Let's celebrate a life well lived rather than grieve over something which is absolutely inevitable. If you grieve over the inevitable, if you sorrow over things that must happen, all you're doing is creating suffering for yourself. And of course, the weird thing is that when these kind of things happen, I start to think, well, what can I do to help my sister? What can I actually do? And what I did was I didn't do all that much at all, but I kind of was there when she needed me and these kind of things. And then one day she calls me up and says, you know, have you got some meditation, some guided instructions on meditation practice, this kind of thing. My sister is very worldly, right? She always kind of dismissed Buddhism, any kind of that sort of stuff. She doesn't believe in anything, complete atheist or whatever you want to call it. But good-hearted atheist, not a bad atheist. But then she started calling me up and saying she wanted to do some meditation practice. And then she started starting to meditate. She started to change her lifestyle. She stopped taking chemotherapy because she realized the chemotherapy wasn't working. She did some alternative treatment. Then I told her, go to Ajahn Brahm's retreat in London. Ajahn Brahm is coming to London. That's where you should go. And to my surprise, she said, yes. And then she went, my sister, together with both my mother and father, right? I'm very proud of having a family like that. We're so open-minded. Usually parents, if your child does something weird, they say, okay, I don't want to have anything to do with you. My parents, they actually went to London, right? Together with my sister. All went on Ajahn Brahm's retreat. I'm really satisfied. I'm very proud of having a family that is so open-minded instead of closing themselves off. What a wonderful thing that is. So she went there. And Ajahn Brahm, as always, joking around, he was pointing to my sister. Oh, this is Ajahn Brahmali's sister over there. She was becoming a nun because she was completely bald, right? She's becoming a nun. And then these people afterwards came up to, oh, you want to become a nun? That's really good. No, actually, I've got cancer. Oh, people were shocked, right? They were really shocked. But then the nice thing was that then she went back to Norway again, and she had one of these CT scans or whatever it is, right? Of going through everything, all these cancer cells. And she had, before that, she had four fairly large tumors in the body that had basically given up on her. She came back, two of those tumors had disappeared completely, and the two remaining ones, like 90% gone. Right? It's astonishing. Again, this idea of impermanence. We look at the world, we see, oh, it's terrible. My sister is going to die. I really thought, next time I saw my sister, it would be the funeral service. That's what I thought. But suddenly things have just turned around. And exactly the same thing with all these other events, elections, things in the world, we just don't know where it's going to go. Suddenly things turn in a different direction. Right? Could be for the worse, of course. We just don't know. It could be for the better. It is unreliable and uncertain. So just go with the flow and allow things to go in the right way. And then, as we do this, one of the wonderful things that happens when we start to understand the incredible unreliability of the world is that we start to turn our direction, turn our mind in a different direction and start to focus on those things that are really matter in life, right? Where can we turn in these kind of situations? And of course, where we can turn is to spirituality, to the Buddhist teachings, to any teachings which looks for happiness, looks for safety, looks for a sense of purpose somewhere else, not in the world, not in the political system, not trying to find the final kind of political system which is going to save the world forever and after. We had too many of those silly experiments already, right? We've tried capitalism, we tried communism, we tried all these things, and it ended up massively unsuccessful and problematic. So let's forget about all those isms. Oh, wait a minute, Buddhism is also ism. Okay, so let's just call it the Dhamma, because Dhamma, there's no ism on the end. So in that case, we kind of circumvent that one very nicely. So we go to that Dhamma, and we look for something else. Try to find happiness somewhere else. Look in a different direction. And this is one of the things we start to discover when the world goes wrong. We find a real refuge somewhere where refuge actually is possible. Refuge cannot be found in the external world, cannot be found in all of these things, because the carpet is always being pulled out from under your feet. So you need to look somewhere else. And that is where Buddhist teachings become so powerful. Or if you have some other spiritual refuge, whatever that might be. Personally, I'm convinced that the Buddhist teachings are very, very useful in this respect. And of course, the Buddhist refuge is basically, first of all, you have the Buddha, right? And think about that. Think about who the Buddha actually was, who he claimed to be, the kind of person that shines through when you read the discourses of the Buddha. And what shines through is something astonishing, something so beautiful, something so powerful. What you see when you read the word of the Buddha, the suttas, you see this person who claimed to achieve awakening, right? And that awakening shines through the pages. You get this feeling of somebody who was profoundly wise when you read those suttas. There's something very powerful, wonderful, beautiful about this. And what that awakening, of course, consists of, it doesn't consist of some kind of really weird thing. The main thing that it consists of is the understanding of happiness and suffering in the world. Where happiness is truly to be found, where suffering is to be found, and how to actually move towards happiness and away from suffering. Right? It is the very core of what human existence is all about. Everybody wants to be happy. Nobody wants to suffer. Maybe the word happiness doesn't resonate with you, but any kind of state that is preferable to something else, call it peace, call it compassion, call it happiness, call it whatever you want, but that state inside of us, which we know is a preferable state. That is what he awakened to, right? The very core of things. And when you understand that somebody maybe they have awakened, you may not know that, but at least there is perhaps that possibility there. Once you start to get a feel for that, you feel, wow, this actually is a real refuge. Because the happiness of the world is so unreliable, so uncertain, so scary, so wobbly, you can't hold on to it. But here is somebody who has found something far, 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 far more profound. Something really deep, going to the very essence of what it means to be a human being. It's incredibly powerful, this idea of a Buddha, once you get your head around what it actually means. The very core, the very essence of what it means to be human. Search for happiness, getting away from suffering. We're doing that every day, all the time. Here is somebody who finds the final answer to this. Right? Wow! It is just, the longer I live this monastic life, the Buddhist life, the more wow it is, almost every day, because it is just so unfathomable when you start to see these things. So this is one side of the Buddha, understanding the reality of happiness and suffering. You can see why I'm talking about this as a refuge. Suddenly the problems in the world start to vanish, right? If you have found a true solution to the meaning of life, to where happiness and suffering lies, who cares about the presidential election in the US? Anywhere is kind of completely irrelevant. Forget about that. I have something much, much more important than that. That is the thing which is at stake here. And of course, the other side about the Buddha, these are the two things about the Buddha I find perhaps the most powerful things about the Buddha. The second aspect is his compassion. Because he knows that he has found the truth, if you like, about happiness and suffering, and found it to its most profound extent. He knows that everybody in the world wants this. Everybody wants to be happy. Nobody wants to suffer. He has found the solution that everybody in the whole world wants. And because he has found that, compassion arises in him. He says, I have to help people because I have seen the truth. I know what everybody out there ultimately really wants. And remember, the Buddha is somebody who has put away the ego, put away the sense of self. For him, life is finished. He has finished. He has found the highest happiness. He has given up all suffering, right? So for him, there's no point in going on anymore. As far as he's concerned, life has really reached its end. But then this compassion arises, and he knows, because he has the answer, he has to teach beings out there, human beings. But because there's nothing more to be done for him, it means that he does so completely free of any ego, any sense of self. And that is the most powerful kind of compassion, the compassion which is absolutely pure. There's no self-centeredness, no sense that there's anything in it for me. In fact, if you think about the Buddha, it was bad for him, right? He had to go into the world, teach all the people. Oh, so much so much sweating and so much hard work to do to teach all these people out there. When if you can just sit back in the cave somewhere, close your eyes and chill out and bliss out day after day, what is preferable? It's obvious what is preferable. He's doing it purely out of compassion for no other reason. So this idea that you have found on the one hand the highest wisdom, and on the other hand you're coming from absolutely pure compassion for the world, those two things together is like dynamite. Right? Because you know that you can trust this person on the one hand, because he's coming purely from compassion, and on the other hand he has the most profound wisdom. So everything he says, every word of the Buddha, you can take it on board, trust it, know that it's coming from the depth of understanding and from compassion, because he cares for us. very, very powerful combination when you get your head around that. Very, one of those refuges which really make a big difference. And then, of course, because of that, then when the Buddha starts teaching, his teaching in the world, this is the Dhamma, right? I said Buddhism before, but again, Dhamma might be a better word, because Buddhism is this very big religion in various shapes around the world. Let's call it a Dhamma. Dhamma is really the word in Indian languages for a teaching like that. So he starts to teach this teaching, right? And you open your ears. This is the second refuge, the refuge of the Dhamma, the teaching that the Buddha tells us. So you read these teachings, and they become a source of inspiration for you, how to live, how to conduct your life. And very, very beautiful, these teachings, very powerful. And I love these teachings. When I teach retreats, Vanajana Grove, I always base them on these words of the Buddha because they're so powerful. Why? I don't really need to say anything myself. Just allow the word of the Buddha to speak, right? Because it's so beautiful. But one of the essential aspects of the Buddha's teachings, one of the things that we all really should focus on all the time, the foundation stone, the basis upon which everything else rests, that is always morality, kindness, goodness of heart. That is where everything else rests upon that. So I wonder if there's anything you should do in your life, it is always just to be as kind as you possibly can. Always, if you have a possibility, always do an act of kindness. Always say something kind. Always think a kind thought to the people around you. This is actually quite difficult to do because often we are overcome by all kinds of problems, delusions, anger, whatever it is. But this is where the real practice is at. Practice kindness, right? Say every opportunity you have. Say something kind. Every opportunity you have, do an act of kindness. And there are so many opportunities in this life. If you start to open up to your day, you look at your the number of opportunities that you have to do the right thing, to do something good, they are so numerous. They are so, you know, just all the time there's a possibility of either saying something which comes from kindness or something which does not. So look at that. Look at how you can improve your life in this way. And if you do that, and then you also include the mind as well, how can you think kind thoughts? How can you be compassionate, understanding, rather than having ill will and negativity? There's enough ill will and negativity already. Let's not add to that. Let's instead look in a different way and change ourselves in a positive way. If you take all those opportunities, wow, it becomes such a wonderful life. It becomes so beautiful. You start to feel so good about yourself when you start to live like this. I was just reflecting the other day because this is how I try to live. Sometimes you may think, oh yeah, I've seen you do bad things. Okay, maybe you have seen me do bad things, but generally I try to live like this. I'm not perfect. I'm not pretending to do that. But trying at the very least. And sometimes the other day I was thinking and I was reflecting back on what I had been doing in the previous couple of hours. And I thought, wow, this is actually quite astonishing. Small little things, right? But I realized I had said the right thing there. By right, I mean coming from a good intention, right? Done a little act of kindness, thought a kind thought, forgiven somebody for a small thing. And I looked back and I thought, wow, actually, it's a pretty impressive series. Right? And this is how we live. When you live like that, it means that you're doing all the right things, and then you are reaping the benefits straight away, because when you reflect on your life, you feel happy about yourself. It's like, hooray, I'm living a good life. You can feel it in your heart. You feel that something right is going on. So this is the refuge of the Dhamma. If you see turmoil in the world, you see problems or whatever, take refuge in your kindness. Go back to the basics. And then when you come on your next meditation retreat, you find you have changed. Your meditation is more profound. Your mind is more pure. You're ready for some serious happiness in your meditation practice. Perhaps even insights. This is the refuge in the Dhamma. Comes from the word of the Buddha and then how we practice. It's so simple to practice and yet so hard at the same time. It doesn't take some kind of super intellect to understand this. What it takes, perseverance and commitment. That is the hardest part on the Buddhist path. Perseverance and commitment. If you can do that, wow, you really have your act together. You're going to go a long way. And the third refuge in Buddhism is the refuge of the Sangha, which is really normally the monastic community, or it can mean also those who have gone a very long way on the path and who have seen the teachings of the Buddha for themselves through direct insight. And it's one of those wonderful things in the world. Sometimes you meet people with these marvelous qualities, and you think, wow, what a wonderful thing it is that such people exist in the world. For me, somebody like Ajahn Brahm is kind of the paradigm, if you like, of somebody who is just an astonishing person. I've lived with him for 22 years, and my respect is still growing for him after 22 years. Right? Usually they say familiarity breeds contempt, right? So I should be really contempting by now, but I'm not contempting at all. I'm just thinking, wow, this person has just these amazing abilities to let go. Ajahn Brahm is the kind of person who can be incredibly busy, go back to his cave, just chill out, you know, lean back a little bit, just take a few deep breaths, and then bang, off his ears into meditation, because he lets go instantaneously like that. He can do the most difficult thing there is to do, all his friends in the monastic life, kicking him out, and he says, okay, no problem, let's just move on and continue. Right, it's just this rock solidity there with somebody like Ajahn Brahm, and you get this feeling of something that is more than what most people could endure. I never met a person like Ajahn Brahm in my entire life before I met him. I thought, this is something incredibly powerful. The person you may see here on Friday night maybe is this very jovial person telling silly jokes, right? Oh, some of the jokes you just, oh no, not one of those jokes. Right? But somehow that is also the sweetness of Ajahn Brahm, right? That he just tells these jokes without, you know, and it's kind of fine. He doesn't care what people think about him. Anyway, what a wonderful thing that is, not to care about what people think about you. You are a kind and good person because it comes from your heart, not because it comes from the pressure outside. So very, very powerful. And Ajahn Brahm, of course, is not the only one. There are other people in this world as well like that. These people exist. But the very fact that we have people like that, or at least one person like that, right here in Perth, wow, you should be so happy. The refuge is there, right? You can see the Dhamma lived in practice right in front of your eyes. Whoa, what a powerful thing that is. How rare it is. How difficult it is to find these things. Right here in Perth. Perth sometimes said to be the very end of the earth, right? The end of the earth is kind of a good place to find people like that, because they like to kind of hide away in obscure corners, right? So what a great thing that is. So these are the things we can take refuge in when the world turns bad, and these are the things that really are solid and wonderful. I think one of the other things that maybe I can talk a little bit about is the danger at times like this to become angry and upset. Please don't go down that road. Please don't become angry about things. It's not going to help, right? All the anger in the world usually just makes things worse. There's a beautiful verse in the famous Dhammapada which says that hatred is never overcome by more hatred. Hatred is only overcome by love. This is an eternal law. Right? If you have hatred, you just create more opposition. If you embrace somebody who is angry, very often the anger will subside very quickly. Sometimes it doesn't, and then there's possibly nothing you can do about it. But at least you're giving the other person the opportunity to change the state of mind by showing kindness and love in return, rather than showing hatred back. So remember that. This is a time, if you feel things are difficult, you feel things are going wrong in the world, please don't get angry, don't get upset. Remember that there are Buddhists, good Buddhists out there, just like us, who have polar opposite political opinions. So what? If they have the same ideas about Buddhism, the same ideas about kindness, the same ideas about meditation practice, about goodness of heart, surely that is what matters, right? These are the truths that really matter in this world. If we can agree on that, who cares about all the other stuff? So open your heart to other people, even though they are different, even though they may hold opinions that you think are completely mad, still open your heart wherever you see goodness in the world. And there is often a lot of goodness out there. And the Buddha said that this is one of the most powerful ways of overcoming anger and resentment is precisely by shifting your view and looking at the goodness, where the goodness is, and not focusing on those areas where you feel something is wrong, something isn't quite right. And he compared it, it's a very nice simile to think about, he compared it to the monk or the nun, the monastics, who is a rag robe wearer, right? This is not a rag robe. I used to have a rag robe, not anymore. But in the ancient India, a lot of rag robe wearers, because cloth was very expensive in those days. And there's this rag robe wearing monk is walking along the roadside, and he sees a rag on the roadside. So he picks it up. And when the first thing he does with that rag, he spreads it out on the ground. And when he has spread it out on the ground, kind of got an overview of the rag, he tears off all the bad parts, and he takes the good parts, and he carries it with him, so he can sew it onto his robe at the right opportunity. And this is exactly the same thing we do with the people around us. We may disagree about something. People have bad qualities. This is the nature of things. So we tear off, we spread them out, get an overview of who they are. We tear off those bad qualities. Why? Because they are rubbish. Right? Tear off the bad qualities. Just like the bad parts of the rag. Chuck it out. It's rubbish. It's bad. It's evil. It's going to make you unhappy. It's going to make the other person miserable. Take up the good qualities, take them into your heart, and carry them with you, and remember that. Right? It's beautiful. And then we remember the good qualities. We think, wow, what a wonderful thing it is that there are people with such qualities in the world. What an amazing thing it is that even in difficult times, people are able to develop all these powerful, wonderful, good qualities. And then you are on the right track. The other simile the Buddha uses for overcoming anger in this way, again, looking at the good qualities, not the bad ones. And it's a simile of the person who is thirsty and parched and hot, right? You're really, if things are going really bad, walking through a desert or whatever. And then you come to a pond, and that pond is covered with algae and water plants, right? So what you do when you come to the pond and you are really thirsty and hot, you push all the water plants and all the algae aside, and then you take your hands and you drink from that water, right? And then when you drink from the water, the heat, the weariness, the problems, everything just disappears. And of course the idea here, the hot person is the angry person, right? You are angry about something. When you come to the pond, this is the other person that maybe you're angry at. You sweep away the algae and the water plants. These are the bad qualities. And then you drink in the good qualities. You drink in the sweet water which cools you down and makes you feel satisfied and makes you feel happy again, right? So imbibe those good qualities in other people. Sweep all the bad things aside and retain those inside of you. And then you will be able to deal with almost anything. Yeah? And then the last simile of the Buddha, which also is very powerful, is when we can't see any good qualities, right? Sometimes it's just so hard. It's not really about whether the other person has good qualities or not. It's about our own perception of the other person. And when we can't see any good qualities, that is the time for compassion. And the Buddha said it is like a sick person. When a sick person is walking along the road and they're really ill, and it's like a desert place where there's no villages, no people to help out. How do you feel for that person? They are sick, they have a fever, right? There's nobody to help them, no doctor, no medicine. Nobody can do anything. How do you feel when you see a person like that? The sickness is not their own fault, right? Sickness is just part of nature. It's part of having a physical body. We all have all this bacteria inside of us all the time waiting to just jump out and kind of kill us pretty much, right? So how do you feel for that person? You feel compassion, right? It's automatic almost. You feel compassion because they can't do anything. They are in a desperate situation. If they continue on, they're going to die. That is how you regard somebody who has only bad qualities. Right? Here is this person who has all these bad qualities. They're not aware of what's going on. They don't understand that they are deluded. They don't understand that they're acting in a stupid way. They're acting for their own suffering. They're acting for their own long-term harm. You may think that a very bad person is hurting you, or hurting the world, or hurting whatever. But actually, the person they're hurting the most is themselves, because they're doing bad things. And when you see that, you turn the whole situation around 180 degrees, and you have compassion, you have understanding, and you feel a sense of, you feel some empathy for them, rather than just rejecting them and being angry instead. So these are some of the most powerful ways, and at a time like this, it's very useful to remember these things, not to be carried on the bandwagon, right, of anger, and of course, it's all righteous, right, it's righteous anger. Don't fall for that trap, because anger is always dangerous. Tends to lead to conflict, leads to problems, makes you miserable. Don't go there, and then you are on the right track. So please, what I've been trying to say tonight is that there is an opportunity in every difficulty. Once we use difficulties in the right way, this is a small difficulty we're seeing now. There are much, much bigger ones in this world. There's always an opportunity. Take the opportunity. Now is an opportunity to learn, to understand the world in a more skillful way. You can grow internally, grow in good qualities, abandon the bad ones. And if you do that in the right way, you become a blessing for yourself. Your life gets better. You feel more happy. The world has less impact on you because your happiness is coming from inside of you. You have a solidity inside of you. You have a true refuge in your life. Incredibly powerful. And then on top of that, you also become a blessing for the world because of your qualities. And the world, frankly, needs more blessings, right? So please become a blessing for yourself and a blessing for the world. And then you are doing the right thing. Yeah. Okay, that's the talk for tonight. Okay, so that is the talk. So now is your chance to ask questions and complain and everything else. Please, please bring up the questions from overseas. Great, thank you so much. So, but always I give precedence to the people who are here. So anyone who wants like to say anything? Yes, please. Can we have the microphone, please? This young man over here would like to ask something. Yo.
Hi, Achan. I really like the idea about being able to see the beauty and the good in difficult times. But if you were to look at it from a different perspective, how do you know that you're actually not trying to escape or run away from the difficult thing and attach yourself to the bliss or the happiness that is the good thing that you're trying to look at instead?
Okay, so how do we know that we're not escaping from things and that we are, instead of actually seeing things realistically or whatever, and kind of hiding our and then being happy in a kind of way which isn't real or whatever. So the point here is not so much to not to see things as they actually are, right? People have good qualities, people have bad qualities. That is the reality of it. And the thing here is more like, what you are asking yourself is, how I want to live a good life. I want to make progress on the spiritual path. I don't really know this person. I don't know what they actually are like. I'm just looking at them from the outside. I don't know what they're like from the inside. So because you can never really know another person perfectly, what you do is you choose those qualities in that person that you like, and you focus on those instead. And then you forgive the bad qualities, right? One of the points here from the Buddha's teachings, the problem is that we often think that we are agents in our own life. Now, if somebody else is an agent in their own life, and they willfully go out and make life difficult for other people, of course, they deserve your anger, perhaps, and all these kind of things. But from the Buddhist point of view, we are not so much agents in our own life. We are conditioned beings. And what I would do, what I would recommend, you look at your own life and see how conditioned you are. See how much you are a product of the circumstance and the world around you. The more you understand that, the more easy it is to forgive other people's stupidity. They're not doing it because they really want to do it. They're doing it because they have habit patterns that have carried on maybe for lifetimes and lifetimes and lifetimes, and they're being railroaded by those habit patterns, and they are incapable of doing anything else, right? They may know in their heart that to be good and kind is the right way. I think most people know that in their heart, right? It kind of, you know that when you're good, something good is going to come out of that. But they're not able to do that. Once you start to see that, you're able to forgive. You're able to have compassion. You're able to see things in a different way. And then instead, you focus on the good qualities. And you say, wow, it's amazing that they have all these good qualities. What a wonderful thing that is. And you look at those good qualities, and then you feel positive about it. So it's not about so much about being blind, but it's about understanding people in a different way from what we normally do. The problem is that we think of people as agents, and because they are agents willfully doing bad stuff, of course they kind of deserve to be punished or whatever. But if you look at people in a different way, in a more Buddhist way, you're actually able to forgive and let go of things much more easily. Does that help? Yeah? Okay, great. Anyone else like to say something?
Something, Ajahn.
Really? Oh, Eddie, yeah?
Yeah. Okay. Ajahn Damai, it's very interesting, and I'm very happy to hear of your sister who had cancer, and that she's on the road to recovery. Yeah. I was thinking of the Buddha's law of dependent origination, and the 12 rings, no? Okay, yeah. It's too long to mention this. The short term for that is this condition that this ceases, that ceases.
Yeah.
You got it?
Mm.
But like this condition, the cancer.
Yeah.
This ceases, the cancer ceases.
Yeah.
It's always hope, you know.
Yeah.
So I was just thinking, like this, you know, the problem, and from the 12 things, the problem enters through our ears, our mouth, our thinking, you know, our hearing, all the, you know. So if we change our lifestyle, it improves. What do you think? And I was just thinking,
yes,
medical
yes.
scientists, you know, should be looking into this. And then, human beings, you know, we neglected these 12 rings, you know. We should be looking more, because there's a lot of hope in that, you know.
Sure, yeah. I mean, all of these things, they are part of dependent origination. It all fits in there, right? Dependent origination is kind of the overview. Yes, indeed, it's part of that. And when you know, dependent origination says that if you do good things, good results happen. That's part of the idea of dependent arising. So it's all in there. So we can look at it in that sense. But sometimes dependent arising can become too theoretical, too hard to understand. And I like simple teachings. The longer I'm a Buddhist, the more I like the really basic stuff, right? What do I actually need to do moment to moment? I need to be kind, right? This is enough for me as a Buddhist monk. After 20 years trying to study all this other stuff, I come back to the basics, right? This is what I actually need to do. This is what really matters. Everything else, I've studied it, and it supports me because it gives me a feeling that the Buddhist teachings actually are very profound and very real. Right? And to that extent, it actually is supportive. But getting back to basics is important. Okay, anyone else like to say anything here? Everybody else absolutely happy? Completely, 100%, nothing to be said? Okay. Whoa, okay, great. So let's look at these few people from overseas who are not entirely happy yet. And hopefully they will become happy sooner. We'll see what they have to say. Okay, I'm unfortunately getting old now, so I've got to get my glasses out, otherwise I can't see very much. So this is from Lorna in Scotland, and she is asking, I find I manage to accept others' doom and gloom mentality, but I tend to start advising when advice has not been asked for. How do I stop myself from putting forward my opinions? Okay. Yeah, it's a very good point, right? Because often if you put people off, if you kind of put out your opinions there all the time, I got the solution for you, I know exactly what you need to do, that kind of stuff. So basically just listen to people. Very often people just want to be listened to, right? And when they're listened to, they often feel better. And if you feel that you're listening too much, you can't deal with it anymore, then pull back. Don't listen so much. Look after yourself as well. So just have that mindfulness. That's really what it's all about. That mindfulness, that ability to see. Instead, remember, one of the things that I always try to ask myself, why do I want to say this? Why am I speaking, right? And at this moment I'm speaking. Why am I speaking? And I always ask myself, am I coming from a good intention? Do I want to help people? Do I want to be kind? Do I want to be a good thing? Do a good thing? Then I open my mouth. It doesn't always work. Sometimes you kind of, it doesn't work out. So ask yourself, now you're going to open your mouth and say something. Why are you doing it? Are you truly coming from the well-wishing? From well-wishing towards the person. Sometimes it's better to tell a joke, right? It was to say something friendly, give them a pat on the shoulder or whatever. Some gesture of kindness that they can kind of understand. You'll be fine, you'll be okay. Don't worry about it, it's good. Instead of actually giving advice. Look into your heart. Go back to the basics. Are you truly coming from kindness or not? How can you improve that kindness? And just by looking at things in that way, maybe you can get away from that habit of giving too much advice. Sometimes it's great to give advice. Sometimes people want advice. That is the time to give it. Okay. Next one. This is Carla in Portugal. It's really cool that we have all these people from places around the world. I really like this. So Carla from Portugal says, when we see the world being destroyed, shouldn't we try to do something, to act in a way to help? Yes, I think that is a very good thing to do, and I think it's great to be able to help out, but I would always say, help out from the goodness of your heart. Don't help out from anger. Don't help out because you know better, and I'm going to show the other people, and they are bad, and I'm going to be angry about it. If you help out in that way, you're going to be blinded in a certain way, and you're going to make mistakes on the way. If you help out purely from the basis of the goodness of your heart, because you want to do better, you become a better judge at knowing when to do, when to act, and when not to act. The problem is, if you act from anger, you tend to act too much, even at times when there's nothing you can do. When there's nothing to do, don't do anything. Just chill, relax, gain energy by meditating and doing good things, but don't act at that time. If you're coming from compassion and kindness, you can make that judgment, and you can be far more effective in doing good things in the world. Do things out of kindness. I remember Ajahn Brahm told me this very interesting story that he sometimes comes up with. I don't know if he has ever told it here. But he said that when he was a young man going to university, we all know he went to Cambridge University and all this stuff, and then he would take part in demonstrations sometimes, right? He was at Cambridge in the late 60s, that would have been during the Vietnam War, so perhaps some of that was part of the Vietnam War protest, I'm not sure. But he said that one thing that really put him off those protests, he loved to protest, thought it was very good to protest, but what put him off was all the anger, right? All the violence, all the sense of kind of, he felt that was really yucky. It's great to protest, to do the right thing, but coming from the right place, for him it was automatic that you had to come from the right place. So this is what I would say, and so help out in the right way. Don't forget to look after yourself. You have to have the energy, you have to have the ability to do these things in the right way. Remember to recharge your batteries, to look after your own well-being. That is also important. Don't become one of these completely self-sacrificing people, but find that right balance between the two. Then it becomes very powerful, very, very beautiful, and it becomes part of your practice as a Buddhist, if you are a Buddhist or whatever you are. Okay, last one. This is from Katrina in Norway. Ah, that's Norway. Hello, Katrina in Norway. So this is where I used to live many, many, many years ago. So let's see what she has to say. I was recently diagnosed with a disease, and the prognosis isn't good. I'm still young and have a hard time accepting it. How can I learn to let go and accept this? Okay, so I think one of the first things is just to, if you accept these things, is just to understand that these things are just part of nature, right? Life is like this. Ajahn Brahm has this beautiful simile that he teaches in all his funeral services that he does for when young people die. And this simile is a simile of this monk who lived in a hut in the jungle in Thailand. And one night, as he was living in this very flimsy hut, right, very kind of simply built hut, one night a massive storm came through that forest. And as the storm came through the forest, trees started to come crashing down right around him. Branches were being torn off the trees, falling to the ground. And he was afraid for his life because of all these trees. He lived in his flimsy hut. He could be crushed at any time, essentially. Then when he comes out in the morning, he looks around. And when he looks around, he sees trees everywhere. And then he starts to look at the leaves. And when he looks at the leaves, first of all, he looks to the ground. And when he looks to the ground, he sees that most of the leaves that have been torn off the trees are the old leaves, the brown ones, the grey ones. But there's also, among those brown ones and grey ones, there are some green ones, some mature leaves, and even some baby leaves are part of that. And then he looks up into the trees. And when he looks up into the trees, that the vast majority of leaves that are remaining in the trees are the leaves that are green, mature green leaves. And of course, the very young ones. But at the same time, there are a few very clingy old brown and grey leaves still clinging on to those trees up there, right? And then Ajahn Brahm says, I'm not sure if that monk realized, or whether it was Ajahn Brahm who realized, I'm not sure. But that monk realized that what is going on here? This is a metaphor for life. Life is just like that. Sometimes the old timers, the old people cling on, right? They become 90, 95, 100. They don't want to let go. And good on them for that. Please carry on. But live your life well if you get very old like that. And then, at the same time, sometimes the young children, the babies, they have to die, just like those young leaves that have fallen to the ground. So beautiful metaphor for life. So remember, nothing has gone wrong, right? Life is like this. It is fine. What matters is the quality of your life. If you are listening to Dhamma Talks here, coming all the way from Australia, coming from your fellow Norwegian countrymen, right? Good on you! You're already on the right track. You're doing the right thing, heading in the right direction. You're living a good life. Obviously, you must have a very good heart. You have lots of wonderful qualities. So celebrate that. What a great thing it is to have all those wonderful qualities. When we are too rarely in life, do we tell each other about all the wonderful thing that we see in each other? And sometimes we need to do that. And I remember when my sister became ill, we just talked about that before, I told her, I wrote her a long email saying, well, you know, you have all these amazing qualities. I thought that was a good time to do that. And she was very, very grateful for that, because it's not the kind of thing that you normally get to hear. So remind yourself of that. Remind yourself of your inherent goodness. You wouldn't be listening to these talks unless you had a lot and lot and lot of goodness inside of you. Nobody who listens to these talks can be really bad. Bad people are not interested in this kind of stuff. It's as simple as that. So rejoice in that. And then relax. Have kindness towards yourself. Have kindness to your illness, right? The illness is just another factor of life. And as you grow in kindness, as you soften down, as you come slowly to accept this, then there's also you maximizing the opportunity for healing at the same time. So win-win situation. And then you are on the right track. So I wish you good luck. It is not a tragedy, right? The tragedy in life is living life badly. Tragedy, dying itself, is not a tragedy. It's just nature happening here. Okay. So that is all for tonight. So let's pay respect to Buddha Dhamma Sangha.
Sutipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Sanghang Namami.